Michelle G, one of the members of the Hard Dog team, 7-month-old dog. Michelle, what breed of dog are you training? I may have missed that one. So we've got a list of 9 things we're going to talk about tonight. Dan, the moderator man, went out of his way and made this incredible list for you guys tonight. I'm going to bring that in. The 9 dog training mistakes you need to avoid. There, you can see them, like, they're at the side of the list over here.
They're so fancy.
1 through 9, yeah. We're going to work our way down that list. We're going to talk about these things. Ask us questions in the chat. Let us know. Michelle G, Heart Dog Team, Miniature Poodle Husky Mix. Very cool. We're going to be working through this. And, you know, it's not in any specific order. It's not, like, the most difficult to the least. But I'll tell you that each one of these things is important as we make our way down the list. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're missing one of these items and you're still making this mistake, it's going to undo some of your training. It's going to make your training a little bit more challenging. But we're going to go for 1. Oh, something that I wanted to mention. So this is often people kind of think, like, well, you know, what's the value in, why is it so important to avoid mistakes? And we make a teaching plan. Actually, I do it on the train, on the way over to the train station, just jot down some stuff. What's the value of avoiding these mistakes? So tonight we're going to talk about the importance of avoiding some of these mistakes. You're going to promote more confidence in your dog. You know, people are always saying, like, well, how do I get my dog to listen to me more? Like, anytime there's a distraction around, I lose their focus. You might be making one of these big mistakes in your training. So, you know, we're going to highlight this this list to help you get better attention, focus, and a little bit of work drive from your dog.
I think it's important to note that some of the things that we're going to tell you are not, like, quick fix things. And
100%.
You know, it's really important that you understand that with dog training, every dog's a little bit different. Sometimes you have to have slightly different approaches. And there's some things where you can, like, make one small change and boom, like, you are good to go. And there's other things that take a while. So you need to remember that if you're really going to affect a lot of change, that you have to remember that it's a slow process. And it's important to do that because it helps you to be a good leader. And sometimes people are a little bit apprehensive to go through the steps that they need to be a good leader because they just think it's going to take forever, or it's a lot of work, or it's inconvenient. But, you know, you have your dog for a really long time. You have them for years and years and years and years. So the first couple years that you could really put in some extra training in, you get to reap the benefits, you know, way after that, where you enjoy just really, really great family member. It's why it's important.
Sam Crenshaw, our night watchman and custodian extraordinary. He's been the employee of the month, like, for the last 6 months in a row, but I see that he left. He's cleaning the train station, the studio, as I just came in. He left a Swiffer. This isn't a product placement, but he left a Swiffer in the corner. I know.
He did, too.
It's okay. We'll see who Employee of the Month for July is. It's coming up pretty soon.
I don't think it's actually, I guess it is kind of on camera, but not really. I'm not sure anybody would notice unless
you just pointed
it out. I just wanted to point
that out for Sam's sake, because he'll know. He'll be watching the stream. Okay, mistake 1 that so many people make, and it is about follow-through. Mm. So what does follow-through mean in your mind, Kale?
Follow-through. This is one that people really struggle with. So follow-through is essentially saying what you mean and meaning what you say.
Yeah.
And in order to have follow-through, you need to have expectations. You need to have an expectation of the fact that you want your dog, or you expect your dog to listen to you. And it could be something very simple as asking your dog to sit. And if they're sniffing the ground, or if they're looking at a distraction, or they're, you know, looking at your pocket to see if you're going to pull out treats first, or, you know, they hear you but they don't listen, what you do next is really important. Do you say sit again? Do you reach for that treat in your pocket to bribe them?
Yeah.
You know, what do the next steps look like? You know, and a good dog trainer that knows that the dog understands the exercise will repeat the command, but then make sure that whatever behavior they've asked for actually happens, whether they place the dog into a sit or whatever the situation might be. But follow through is really going to be important, because that is what allows your dog to understand that they actually need to listen to you, because if they don't, there is follow through. If you're one of these broken record command givers where you say your command over and over and over again, or you get louder, or you get a bit more angry, or throw the whole snap and point at your dog. Your dog just starts, it goes in one ear and out the other. So obviously our dogs need to be trained to understand the cues and the expectations that we are asking of them. But once that's in place, follow through is extremely important. And that's where some of that, you know, elbow grease comes in, because people don't want to do the work to follow through.
We get some interesting comments on our content, whether it's wherever it is, wherever it's posted. And I remember you talking a little bit about follow through and some other thing. And the person said, well, what does it matter if I'm loud? You know, what does it matter if, like, he finally responds when I raise my voice? Well, do you really want to have to reach that point where you're yelling at your dog for them to actually listen? You want them to listen no matter how loud you ask them. More importantly, you want them to listen the first time every single time. That's what we're driving towards with the McCann method. We're making sure that we're setting our dogs up to be successful, and we're making sure that the dog is responding the first time. So it's not, hey, Scooter, Scooter, Scooter. You know, that's the kind of dog ownership that I want. I want my dog to, you know, I ask him to sit, he sits. I ask him to come over here for his safety and for, like, my enjoyment of having a dog. And, like, again, his safety is probably the most important thing. But there's actually lots of instances I can think of where we were out or doing something and we need the dogs to, like, lie down because the car was coming. We were traveling one time and there was a four-wheeler coming through the forest and we're like, lie down. Everybody just lied down. It wasn't like, lie down. Oh, lie down.
It was like,
down.
Please lie down.
Right.
And we don't have to say it angrily either. It's just, you know, very light and happy, because we motivate the dog to want to listen so that it doesn't feel like a burden to them and we don't have to be angry to get a response.
Yeah. So, you know, the big mistake that people are making here is often they're not following through. So you might be thinking, well, what the heck does that look like? Lucky for you, I've grabbed a clip of a demo. I'm not sure. It was from a previous video, but it shows a little puppy, Highlight, who we had couple of years ago when she was just little, and she wanted to chew on a training bag that was on the floor. So Kale saw this as a great opportunity. Okay, let's make a little teaching section, and I've got that. I'm going to give you this little headphone thing, and then we can listen to this because you guys should get audio from this as well.
Can I answer a quick question? Or just comment, because I think it's a really intuitive question. So Barb Backus asks, so how many times do you repeat the command for follow through? And I think that that's a really great question.
That is a good question.
So essentially what we're going to do is give the command once. And again, this is after we know the dog understands the behavior. But even if we're teaching something, we might help them in this circumstance. But basically, Barb, what we would do is give the command once. And if we don't get the response that we're looking for, we would say the command a second time. And then within 1 second of the dog hearing the command, we would follow through with something that gets the dog to do the behavior. And in the early stages, that might be like luring them into position with a treat. Mm-hmm. That might be, you know, if it's a sit, we could lure them into a position with a treat, or we could place them gently into a sitting position, or we could lift up on the leash. Or, you know, if my dog's jumping, I would say off, and then if I didn't get a response, off, and then I would follow through. So your command and your follow through need to happen within 1 second of each other so that your dog actually can pair those two things together because of how a dog learns. But that's a great question.
Yeah. New blue bait pouches. They arrived today. I talked to our trainers in the office and I said, can we make these blue ones available?
Because
it's a brand new drop tonight. I said, can we make them available for our YouTube audience? And you guys get the first crack at this. Nobody else knows that they're
we
in.
Just got them.
Yeah, we did. So make sure you grab yours. They're available. I tried to like make it somehow available on the YouTube chat. I'm not sure how that works, but
I love the magnet opening because it just like it just makes
and
it.
And what's
so
the
much
benefit
convenient.
Of a bait pouch versus like your hoodie pockets or the your jean pockets?
Clean laundry for one.
For sure.
Yeah, and I like too. I can move it around so I can make it more visible, or I can hide it a little bit depending on where my dog is in their training.
When I was in the middle of training, when you have a dog in training and it. I know most of you guys probably are. I loved being able to like portion out my treats or set out like the food for the day, training for the day, and then I could just like pop it in the fridge. It goes in the fridge. You know, I do some training in the morning, take it out, you know, go to the fridge, pull it out at, you know, after lunchtime when I want to do training or when I get home from work or whatever the situation is. But I don't have sticky, gross pockets if you have sticky, gross treats.
Yeah.
But sometimes those sticky, gross treats are exactly what your dog needs. So this is a great option. Anyway, just a new color swatch, but it is an awesome bait pouch.
And actually, to to speak to Barb's comment, timing is so important. So another thing the bait bag is good for is if you have your treats like way down in your pocket and you're trying to get the treats out, by the time you get the treats out, the dog's doing something totally different. You've missed your yes moment. So it just makes your timing a little bit better as well.
For sure. Now, I think we need to go to this demonstration of follow through because I think this will hopefully help you guys really understand what the heck we're talking about.
Now, you may have noticed in the last training session that there was a pink bag on the floor that actually it was a Highlights travel bag, and she had some treats and some toys and some stuff in there. Well, after we did this exercise with her, we gave her just a couple moments of freedom, and Highlight got really interested in that bag. And you might have a puppy that's chewing on chews. You might have a puppy that's getting into mischief. Whatever the thing is, I want you to watch how Kayla addresses that with her.
One of you on either side of me.
I know. Yeah. I'm much more pale in that other one.
You are.
So your puppy needs to have a house line on. It's in, redirects her, brings her away. Highlight's like, I don't know. I'm not leaving that thing. Now, Kale brings her over here. Now, something that's really important that I want you to really pay attention to. Now, Kale redirected the dog, used a treat to guide her away.
How many of you guys have a puppy at home who is just like Highlight?
They're like, no, yeah, I want to investigate in here.
I don't think so. Yeah, there's something sniffy on the floor. Or there's something I want to chew over here. Let me know in the chat. I know it's probably lots of you guys.
However, we don't want Highlight to feel like she's getting, she's being redirected from whatever the nuisance behavior is onto a piece of food, because she's going to quickly learn that I do this thing, you come in and redirect me, I get fed. So what Kale does, which is really interesting, and I wasn't paying attention to this when I was holding the camera, but what you see her do is she gets Highlight to offer something else. She redirects her, which is very clear, don't do this, brings her over, and then just lures a sit. Highlight offers a sit. Now he has an opportunity to reward her in that position. But
that's really
you mustn't allow your dog to continue rehearsing these behaviors. So using something like a house line, in this case it's just a little piece of rope with a clip on it, is really, really important. That gave Kale the control she needed to guide Highlight away. With bump, bump, didn't really work. She's still interested. A little bump, 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 a little more until she committed away. Then...
Okay, there's so
much.
So much. I know. This is the thing. You're a great trainer, so you knew exactly what to do next. And I know that's maybe where you're struggling at home. It's like, well, okay, I did the first part. What's the critical? Give me three critical takeaways of what you just watched, what these guys just watched at home.
Number one, the puppy was wearing a house line. So when she was getting into mischief, and she wasn't really doing anything too terrible, but the same actions could be if she was trying to go for one of your running shoes or chewing on your table leg. Exact same steps will happen. But by having a house line on her, I didn't have to grab her body. I didn't have to chase her. I didn't have to scare her or hurt her. I could just grab the leash and redirect her. The second thing is that I didn't use the food to lure her away from that bait, from that distraction. Because a smart puppy, especially a smart puppy that is food motivated, she might go, ooh, when I run over the shoes or this, mom or dad pulls out treats and they lure me away. So I bet if I keep going there, I'll keep getting more treats. So I used the leash, which was a little bit more unpleasant, to move away from the item. And once she was a little bit closer to me, I used the food to get her to do a behavior for me. So putting her back in the driver's seat and using my reinforcement to reward her for something that was unrelated to being distracted. Yeah. So in this case, I just lured her into a sit. But the third thing is that I took an opportunity to teach her around a natural distraction. Rather than just, you know, taking her away from that distraction or lifting the distraction up, I used it as a training opportunity. I actually encouraged her to go back over to that distraction, and then I called her name. And because I had just given her a few treats a second earlier, she willingly left the distraction and turned and looked at me. And if you watched how I rewarded her, I scurried away from the distraction and rewarded her a few feet away to allow myself to be a little bit more high value. And then I repeated it a few times, and you saw her response get faster and faster each time that I called, which means in the future, when she decides to go over to the distraction and I say Highlight or leave that or whatever command you're using at the time, you have a puppy that goes, ooh, I know what to do when I hear that command. And then you have a dog that's actually offering to listen. And that puppy is only like 9, maybe 10 weeks old in that video. But again, through good information, good management, I'm not busy doing something else in the kitchen. My eyes are on her so I can have good timing. She's learning really great skills.
Sets up the next point perfectly. And the next point that you set up is about setting up good choices. If Kale were to leave that bag on the floor and not be supervising the puppy, she's not setting them up for good choices. Mm-hmm. Can you think of times with your dog that after the fact, after they've jumped on the counter, after they've, you know, chewed on something, after the fact that they've peed in a corner in the house, you're like, oh, darn, I can't believe this is still happening. But after, you know, when you see it happen, you're like, oh, geez, I probably shouldn't have allowed them to do that. So the big mistake that you need to avoid is don't set your puppy up to make mistakes. You know, you have to puppy-proof your house a little bit. You have to take advantage of these moments exactly like Kale did. She recognized that, oh, this is a bit of a training challenge. But instead of her thinking like, oh, you darn puppy, stop chewing on the bag, she's like, oh, this is a great time mm-hmm. for me to work on this skill. Setting your dog up to make great choices is exactly what they need. Mm-hmm. And the mistake that's made when you set your puppy up to make bad choices, it lowers your leadership a bit because you're always coming in, you're saying, no, don't do that. Oh, don't do that. Oh, get off of there. Don't do this. Mm-hmm. Don't do that.
Wrong.
Yeah. I mean,
not fun.
No, any great coach you've ever had has been really good at like pulling the best out of you and like encouraging, you know, the good stuff, but also like identifying like, don't do this. Do this instead. That's yes. That's great coaching. Mm-hmm. And when you're a great coach for your puppy, you're a great leader. So avoid the avoid these situations where you're not sure what your puppy's going to do, because if they make the wrong choice, they could be just naturally rewarded mm-hmm. or gratified by it, and you don't want that.
Yeah, it's really important that you start to learn when you can get to the point where you can trust your dog or trust your puppy to listen, because you want to be ready for action. That's why it's really important to use things like leashes or long lines or in some situations, crates or whatever it might be, so that when you're not ready to work through it, or you know, somebody all of a sudden walks up the driveway and they knock on the door and all of a sudden your dog just like breaks out barking, or you know, somebody walks into the backyard and then your dog races away and doesn't come when they're called and jumps all over the person and you didn't have a leash on because yeah. you just weren't ready. That's why you want to be prepared for those things. So there is nothing better than a natural training opportunity that arises. And boy, oh boy, if you are ready with your training tools and good timing and good information, you can just train things so quickly. But unfortunately, too many people are unprepared. They can't necessarily predict when something might not go well, and then the puppy just learns to do it wrong a few times, or unfortunately many times, before we go in and effect change.
So speaking of segues, you're talking about like being able to interrupt the behaviors, yep. being able to do something about this, you know, your puppy making mistakes. I also saw someone in the chat say like, well, I can't watch her all day. What am I supposed to do?
No, you can't.
I'm just going to grab that puppy from outside.
Yep. You definitely can't watch your puppy all of the time. No, nobody can. It's impossible. We have to sleep. We have to shower. We have to help kids with homework. We have to work. We have to do all kinds of things. And we can't, you know, be devoting all of our time to the puppy. So we need a place to put them where they are going to be safe, and also where they're not going to be able to rehearse bad behaviors. Now, we recommend that you use a crate or some type of confinement where your dog has you know, a place to go, so that you don't have to worry about them when they're there. And then also, when my puppy's out of the crate and I'm making dinner and I do want to give my dog a bit of free time because I've been working all day and I'm home and I want to give them a bit of free time, my dog's free time consists of being baby gated into the kitchen with you know, safe toys that are on the floor for the puppy to chew, and they're wearing a house line, all in the span of the kitchen. So I have management tools so that if they decide to stop chewing on the bone and grab the tea towel off the stove, I'm ready for that because I have a long line and they can't run out of the kitchen because they're baby gated in. And it is quite a long time before I take some of those training aids away because I feel like my puppy or my dog listens well enough that I don't necessarily need them. So it's really helpful to have all of these tools in place so that, you know, they just can't get away with things as easily. But if you have a puppy, you should definitely have baby gates in the house or ways that you can kind of keep the area that you're giving your dog a free roam smaller. And then as time goes on, you can open more and more space up to your dog when they're showing you that they're ready. But, you know, those tools, baby gates, leash, crate, would be my top three suggestions.
Well, and honestly, for any dog in training, especially an adult dog, long line. when you're outside.
Yeah.
I mean, what a great management tool that is. Because as your dog and puppy starts to learn some skills, they get a sense that they're a little bit more free, but
yeah.
you still have that long line available so that you can go out and work in some
yeah.
of the places that, you know, might be extra challenging.
Because you want to let them have fun and 100%. Run around and,
yeah.
and do some things, but we all want to make sure that we still always have a way to keep our dogs safe and to have control so that we don't get into a situation where our puppies can run off or whatever, and we're not prepared for that. We also don't want to be dragging them around on a leash all of the time. So
yeah.
The long line is a nice, happy medium.
Yeah, totally. This leads nicely into our next point here. When we're talking about how to get our dogs to be a little bit more looking for the right decisions to make, looking to make good choices. This has a lot to do with what people are rewarding their dogs for. And a big mistake that people make is just feeding their dog for everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, I argue that I wouldn't feed a dog just for being cute. I know we might differ here once in a while, but she's, you know, an excellent dog
trainer.
It's
because they're already trained, though, that I can do
right.
silly things like
right.
that.
So, you know, can you think of a couple of examples of...
Also, while they're being cute, they're usually giving me attention.
Always, always.
So
yeah,
I'm not
a great
technically
point.
Feeding for
that's
nothing.
A good point. That's a good point.
Yeah,
yeah, it's funny. I had this light bulb moment when I was a student, before I was a trainer, and I was actually coming to class, and I had Deegan sit before I opened the door, and I just never really thought of it. I just, you know, thought she's on leash, she's gonna go out the door when I open the door. But having your dog work for it a little bit more is a great way to elevate your leadership status. So what I did, and I recognized after the power of this thing, is that anytime I was gonna open the door, I asked her to sit.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime I was gonna put a clip my leash on her collar, I asked her to sit rather than, you know, trying to take hold of her and take the collar and whatever. I'd ask her to sit. How many of you guys have a dog who goes completely bonkers the moment you're going to go for a walk? As soon as you're about to go for a walk, your dog's like, wow, this is great. It's party time. What would it look like if you asked them to sit in control just for a moment so that you clip the leash on? Then you step outside and ask them to sit and just gather their thoughts a little bit, you know, sort of bring that excitement level down. What do your walks look like at that point when you're starting with some success? Asking your dog to work for it a little bit more in all of these situations around the house can be really, really impactful.
Mm-hmm. Can I add something?
I'd love for you to add something.
So sometimes when we think about like working for it, we sort of think about like a physical reward, like a treat or a toy or something like that.
This is a great point.
But remember that also like affection goes a long way as well, or praise. I was reviewing a video from an online student today, and she had sent a video in of her practicing her walking on lead, and she was struggling with her her puppy just sniff, like never looking up at her. It's like they were walking, the leash was pretty loose, but the dog's just sniffing this, doesn't
yeah.
really know that she's alive. And she said, was asking me what she could be doing differently, and she was trying to use her voice to motivate the dog, blah, 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 blah. But when I was watching the video, what she was doing is as the dog was sniffing, she was going, good girl, let's go, good girl, good girl. And so she kept saying, good girl, way to go. And the puppy was just sniffing this and sniffing that. And so when I had commented about the fact that she should interrupt that behavior, and when the dog looks up, then to do the good girl, she was like, oh my God, I've been training her to think that sniffing is okay because I just tell her good girl all the
right,
time.
Right.
And I was like, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So timing is really important. You know, we want to use our voice, we want to motivate them, but if our dog's not doing the thing we want them to do while we're rewarding, and that could be all of those types of rewards, we could be accidentally making that behavior worse. So make sure that what your dog is doing is actually worthy of your positive reinforcement so that you're molding and shaping your dog in the direction that you want them to go.
Someone mentioned in the chat talking about jumping. Turn around so that they stop jumping. And I think this is an important point, and this speaks to work for it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
No information is bad information. And what you're doing essentially when you're giving your dog, when you're turning around, is giving them no information. We really want you to think like a leader. How can I be the best coach for this dog possible? And a good way to do that is to give them the information mm-hmm. that it's not okay to jump up. that if you work for it a little bit, if you keep your butt on the ground, you'll get praise and whatever that, you know, valuable reward is mm-hmm. for them. But I'm so, you know, I hear that suggestion from, you know, places. And I always think, you know, dogs need more than that. Yeah. They need more information. And they really need to understand that you call the shots.
Yeah. I'm going to be super candid and super honest with you guys right now about this. You know, when it comes time to dogs doing a bad behavior, you know, with my trained dogs, if they were to do something wrong and I was to stand there and just look at them for a second, chances are they would probably go, oh, right, oops, and then default into the correct behavior. Why do they do that? Because they already know what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And so they go through that thought process and they think, well, I'm not getting any reinforcement for that, so I'll change. That's where this comes from. However, when you take a new person and a new dog that doesn't have a lot of respect for their human, that doesn't have a lot of training yet, that doesn't really care, they think jumping up is a lot of fun, going the ignoring route isn't really a good way to do it because jumping up is so rewarding. So even though you're not physically giving the dog a reward, the dog's getting self-reward by jumping and having a lot of fun. Now, eventually, if you ignore them, yes, they'll stop and then you can praise at that point, but you could really speed through the process a lot faster by interrupting the behavior really quickly right then and there so that they don't get to rehearse it and then quickly show them what they should do instead. Yep. And, you know, you're going to cut your training in half or more by giving them a little bit more clear information. So that's sort of where it stems from. There, you know, some people will see that happen, and I see TikToks, I see all kinds of things where, you know, I see the person ignore the dog and the dog eventually sits.
Right.
But that's a trained dog. We're talking about your dogs that don't have any training yet. They don't know. They need guidance. They need direction. So we need to be giving them clear, well-timed information so that we can get this problem solved quickly. That's the goal. We want to get on top of it.
I also want to speak to that for a moment. And someone had mentioned that I saw it in a YouTube video. This is why I love that you brought that up, because this is we want to have these conversations. That I want my dog to listen to me. You know, I know we use shaping a lot in different training, but like if I say something, I want it to have weight. You know, if I say, mm-hmm. go lie down, or you got to sit, or stop it, or whatever, you know, whatever thing I'm asking for, I have an expectation that my dog will do it because I've been in that situation. Recall is a great example when we're working on a come command, mm-hmm. Where it must happen right now. You know, I need my dog to turn 180 degrees and fly back to me. This speaks to a very specific event that I had when I was out for a walk with my dog, and I was being a bad trainer. I was a student at the time, but she was just dragging a leash, and she was running across the road chasing a bunny, and there were cars on the road. I yelled, come. She turned. We were only like halfway through Life Skills 1. She turned around. This is many years ago. Turned around, came running back to me. I was never been more excited, but I'd built so much value, and I'd never had her wonder, like, what does he want? She understood that every time I asked for this thing, this is exactly the results that I wanted. So the moment she heard that word, she left the bunny, which was blew my mind, and she ran all the way back to me. But that, you know, that's why I think that's where I differ from the opinion that turning their back is a good idea. Because I want my voice to carry weight.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Moving on.
After that sermon, we'll move on.
Yeah. I believe. This speaks to working for it and the natural training opportunities you have throughout the day. If you are a puppy owner or you have a young dog in training, I will tell you that there are all kinds of great natural training opportunities that you might be missing right now. Let's talk about like, I don't know, getting up in the morning and going out when you're at home with a young puppy.
My favorite thing. It's like my favorite time of day because there's just so many things you can do with the puppy. Morning time is like such a great training opportunity with your puppy because there's so many things that you can do. It can start immediately from the moment you let your puppy out of the crate in the morning to go for a pee. We teach our puppies from a really early age not to DoorDash, not to barge through the door. So when we open the crate door, they learn really from a young age to wait until we tell them, okay, and then let them go out. And one of the reasons why we do that is to teach respect and self-control, but also so we can put their little house line on so that when they come out of their crate, we're ready for action should we need to be. And so we work through that. We have We have a YouTube video on exactly how to teach that rather than wasting your time talking about it now. So that's one thing that we'll do. And then the next thing we'll do is, you know, work on door manners. So not the crate door anymore, but like the actual door. So when we go outside, we'll practice working a sit. We'll maybe change our house line for our long line. We'll go out and work a pee, get a pee, get a poo, get a little bit of exercise. And then we might spend literally 2 or 5 minutes doing something to get the dog active. It could be some restraint recalls. It could be some response to name. It could be a couple little moments of tugging out, things that sort of get the dog moving and shaking and exercise a little bit. And then when we go in, we'll spend, you know, 5 or 10 minutes rather than just putting the food down and walking away. We'll take some of the food at mealtime, at breakfast time, and do a few minutes of training, and then maybe, you know, let them eat the rest of the meal in their crate to build value for the crate. So there, that whole process maybe takes you 10, 15 minutes and you've worked on like 6 things.
Yeah, it's
the best.
I absolutely love it. And you train your puppy and you train your dog. And the thing I wanted to bring up is that Kale says puppy, but if you have a dog in training.
Any age.
It doesn't matter what age they are. It's not about their age. It's about their level of understanding. Mm-hmm. So if you have a dog in training who's like 8 months old, 10 months old, whatever, you can consider them a puppy. Mm-hmm. All of these same skills apply to them, and all of these same actions you're able to do with that young dog in training, because they don't know not to dart out the door. They don't know to wait while you put the food bowl down. You know, we're using we use puppy and dog loosely, because what we're speaking to is the level of understanding.
Yeah.
And boy, oh boy, when you start to apply, we'll do puppy training with our like adult dogs sometimes. Yeah. We'll do simple skills and work on simple things that you'd say like, oh, that's a puppy thing. But the amount of people that'll say something like, well, my dog's 5 months old. What do I do at this point? Well, it depends. And I hate that answer normally, but in dog training, it's really important. It depends if they have a foundation of understanding. If not, then you got to start at the ground floor.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, you know, as you guys are sitting here, wouldn't it be nice if you had access to this kind of information on more than just like... It
would be nice.
Sending out your chats in the YouTube live stream? Well, in fact, you can. And that was my favorite transition to the Puppy Essentials.
And I never
screen.
Know where to sit, so that I'm inside the camera.
I know.
Yeah. So obviously we get together with you guys every other Thursday to talk about these things. And we also have, you know, our great YouTube videos that come out every single week. But we actually have full programs that you can take that will work on all of this stuff, all of these exercises, and way more than we ever mentioned on here, step by step by step. And you know, it took us a long time to come out with some online classes because we really didn't want to have, you know, a one-dimensional program where you just watched a video and then you had to follow along. We wanted you to be able to have access to our professional trainers. We do have an in-house program here in Flamborough, Ontario, where we have about 30 instructors and we have classes all week long. We do so many great things. But we wanted to be able to offer that online as well. So essentially, not only will you get the programs, but we also do weekly live Q&A, like coaching calls, kind of like this, but much smaller group, much more intimate. There's actually a little bit more back and forth between us and you.
And we get to see you.
We get to see your faces.
Yeah.
We have instructors, and we have a support group where, you know, hundreds of students are together where they can ask questions. You can see other people. You start to learn that you're not the only person with the problem, that other people have similar things. You get to see the feedback that instructors are giving them as well. It really is quite a supportive and helpful community of things. So for Puppy Essentials, it's for puppies that are 4 months and under. If you have a puppy that's over 4 months, and we have a course called Life Skills where we work on slightly different exercises. But the programs really are fantastic, and you do get a lot of interaction with
professional dog trainers.
Human people. Yeah.
That's the thing. People think like online, oh, you know, I just watch a bunch of videos and maybe I'd have like
we'll
a chat
hold you
group.
Accountable.
Yeah, for sure. There's actual trainers that are helping you through the program, which is so, so valuable. Awesome. So maybe we'll see you next week in the coaching call.
Oh, thanks, Joyce. That's really sweet.
Talking about the bridge between natural training opportunities every day and controlling your dog's resources. This is a surprising but amazing non-confrontational way to insist on good leadership. So what resources might you control if you had a young dog in training who is, you know, making bad choices? You know, what sort of things are you going to limit their access to?
Well, there's lots of things that you should do that you should limit their access to. Three things that come off the top of my head would be freedom, would be food, and toys. Those would be the three items that I would control with my puppy, because those are things that I can utilize to raise my leadership. I can also use them as reinforcement. I can use them as intention getters. I can use them as lots of things. So I'll talk about the toy thing first, because this usually surprises people. You know, when we get a puppy or a dog, often if you like see pictures, their floor is like just scattered with this type of toy and this type of toy and this chew bone and all these things. And they wonder, like, I give these dogs 30 toys. Why is my dog chewing on the shoes and the couch? Sometimes what happens is we give the dog such a wide range of things to chew. We don't really supervise really well that the dog's chewing on the tug toy. And then 2 seconds later, they're, you know, chewing on the couch. So what we would recommend is to limit the amount of things that you give your puppy at one time. You know, we have dog toys coming out the wazoo here, but we rotate them. So when we have a young puppy, I'll have like two or three down maybe at a time. I'll have that for about a week or so, and then I'll pick those three up, put another three down. The week after, I'll put the first three down. The puppy has no idea. They think it's great. What I give the puppy to play with, though, is really important. Mm-hmm. So we divide our interactive toys between chew toys and interactive toys. So at our house, you'll see chew bones, you'll see Kongs, you'll see indestructible toys out for our puppies to play with, but you're not going to see the puppy tugs. You're not going to see rope toys ever. You're not going to see fuzzy stuffed animals or squeakier toys or things like that. Our puppies don't get free access to those things because we don't want them learning to, number one, chew them and wreck them, or learn that those things are going to be played with and enjoyed without us. Yeah. And that's really the big ticket item here. I want my dog to think that when she picks up a frisbee, when she picks up a ball, the first thing she thinks about is coming to share it with me so that we can have fun together, because that really builds relationship. I'll even sometimes do that with chew bones. I mean, when we have young dogs at night and we want to teach them to kind of be settled and calm, if we want to relax and watch a movie or something, then I'll get a, you know, a chew bone and have the puppy come up on my lap and chew the bone and just learn to be calm and settle. But we try to control those resources. I think I already spoke to controlling freedom earlier when I talked about baby gates and things like that. So when we have a young dog in training, they don't get to go inside, outside whenever they want to, or around the house whenever they want to.
Yeah.
We really control their freedom until we feel we can trust them. And then once we do trust them, then we, you know, we don't worry about it. But it does take a while to get there. So controlling resources is really, really important, and can make, it's a small change, but it can make a massive difference in how well your dog listens to you or how well they respect you.
I want to talk for a second about interactive toys. And we have the opportunity, we get pitched all kinds of products to sell and whatever often. But we insist on making sure that you get the products that are not only fun for you and your dog, but they're also great for training.
Yeah.
So we sell specifically interactive toys that you can build relationship with, build leadership with as you're working on your out command, but they're also super fun and very functional. The utility of a tug toy, it's think about this. The best part about the tug toy is the fact that you're at the other end of it for your dog. Imagine the elevating your status because you're just choosing the right toy to play with them with. So if you're choosing toys for your dog, make it an interactive one. That way they're coming to you looking for information, but also you are the center of the world for them. We have some friends, we actually shot a video this week, a brand new puppy, and it's funny because you see the evolution of puppyhood. When a puppy comes home and they're cute and adorable and they're really young, you're the center of the puppy's world. If you've had a puppy, if you got your dog as a puppy, you'll know this, that as they grow up and get a little bit older over the next couple of weeks, they start to like discover the rest of the world. The world opens up to them and they start choosing you less. It's a really important time in your training to reinforce the fact that, hey, buddy, now you have a little bit more freedom, a little bit more room. If you choose me, I'm still the best thing in here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, look to me for information. Look to me for guidance. Choose me instead of choosing the cat or, you know, the person walking by or whatever the thing is. There's value here. Really important. And choosing the right toy can make a big difference when it comes to making right choices for your dog. Number seven, earned opportunities. So this is basically talking a little bit about, you know, when can my dog go on the bed? When can my dog have access to the living room? People rush this part.
When can my dog play off leash?
Right, that's a great example.
Or when can I take them great for a hike without a leash on?
Totally, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about why those need to be earned opportunities so that you don't make this common mistake.
Yeah. And I think we probably drove this home a lot already, but, you know, what we don't want to be doing is putting our dogs into a situation where it's too easy for the dog to not listen. So, for example, you know, if I want to take my dog to the park and let my dog play off leash and do some retrieving or running around or whatever, if I am not 110% sure that when I call that dog back, they're going to come back immediately, I would not be giving that dog off leash freedom.
Yeah.
This is something that I have to follow in my own pack of dogs. You know, Ken and I have several dogs together, and whenever we have a young puppy, we are very slow to go for walks around the property or whatever and let the puppy join.
Right.
Because in the early stages, a young dog that's around a bunch of other dogs, that is so fun and so exciting. And we are the last people that they're interested in paying attention to. So we go very slowly. We'll, you know, walk the puppy individually and let the puppy run around and practice our recall. And then we might bring one dog along with us that's boring and doesn't want to play with the puppy and just sort of does their own thing. We build up to being ready to say, okay, you know what? I can't remember the last time that I needed to pick the long line up to make sure the puppy listened, or I needed to repeat myself, or whatever the situation is. Now I think I'm ready to graduate and give it a try. But you want to kind of feel good about the freedom that you're going to give your dog and be ready to take it away. You know, if your puppy has been given couch and bed privileges and then all of a sudden their listening starts to go out the window, their recall is all of a sudden terrible, they're barking and won't stop, or maybe they're growling or not getting out of the way when you get on the couch. Well, I would be taking those privileges away immediately so that you can get, you can get back on track. You can give and you can take away any of these privileges very, very quickly. And
it's important that you do
send a good message to the dog.
I love that. Yeah, there's an ebb and flow to these things.
Yeah.
You know, if a dog gets something that they can have because they've earned that opportunity and they start making mistakes, this is so common with like house training. The puppy's now, okay, we've moved the baby gates from the kitchen to now the living room in the kitchen or whatever your situation is. And all of a sudden, puppy starts having accidents in the living room. Guess what? They don't get access to those things. And if they're in there, you're absolutely 100% supervising them. I think a lot of people think that like once you've trained something, that's
it. You're done.
Yeah. And that's just not the case.
I always say it's like putting gas in the car. You know, you just don't fill your car up once and then like you can drive it forever.
Right.
You know, you got to fill the gas up every once in a while so you can keep going. Dogs are the same way. You know, dogs are dogs. They're not machines. They're animals. And they respond to what happens with them daily. So if you train really, like we see this happen with people in class. Like they're in class. They're being held accountable. They have to train because they're coming into class.
Yeah.
Their dogs are awesome. And then they take 3, 4, 5 months off. They come back to class and they're rusty. The dog isn't listening as well because they're not maintaining the dog's listening skills because they just sort of let it go. And you need to be able to react. One thing that happens with us as dog trainers is our dogs make exactly the same mistakes that your dogs do.
So true.
Because they're dogs. But the difference between us and you is I've done it 100 million times now. And the second I see a glimmer of a problem, I'm on top of it right away. And then it doesn't really fester into anything big. So the more you learn, the quicker you can react and the less problems you have to work through because you can do it really, really quickly. It's not that some dogs are better than others or whatever. They all make the same mistakes. They're all animals, and it's just what happens, but it's how you respond to it that really makes a difference.
Yeah, that's really important, especially if you have a dog and you're not like, well, I don't have puppy problems, but like all of your dog's skills are perishable. So reinforcing once in a while, that great response name, rewarding
following
a sit,
through.
Following through. You see that up on the list. Like these are the important things that as dog trainers, we understand because we've seen it. People make the mistakes over and over again, but we also know we're very aware of the changes in the dog's behavior. That, geez, that wasn't a really snappy response to name, or boy, they really liked smelling that, whatever the ditch out on our walk. We need to make sure we do a few response to names before we even get there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a hack for you guys as you move through the training process. Good timing. It's really one of the huge mistakes that people make, especially when they're trying to address a nuisance behavior like barking in the yard or digging holes, you know, wherever, or chewing on their bed, is that people, you have to interrupt the behavior while your dog is in the act of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't teach them to not do that thing unless you intervene while they're doing it, because they just can't associate the two things. So if you come home and your dog, there's garbage everywhere. You've had your dog in the kitchen and you've come home from whatever your thing was, and there's, you know, the garbage bag's been ripped apart. Well, your dog will have no idea when you're frustrated and stomping around that you're mad because of that thing. Now, they might respond. This is really common with potty training. They might look like they know what they did wrong. Hear this all the time. Like, he knows he did something wrong. That's not the case. What he knows is that something's wrong with you.
You look frustrated. Change your body language or your energy.
Totally. So when it comes to chewing, when it comes to all these nuisance behaviors, you must have good timing. What does that mean? You have to have a leash, a house line, long line, whatever the situation warrants. You have to have some sort of management tool ready, but you also need to be supervising, because when your puppy makes that choice, if you've tried to set up all the good choices, but somehow your puppy made a bad one, you need to be ready to train through it. I love that example Kale gave earlier in the live stream. If you jumped on a little bit later, head back when we're done. Watch in the front third somewhere. We show a very specific example of a puppy chewing on a training bag. But that's what you need to do. You just can't wait too long to do it, because it's not fair to the dog and it's not good for your training.
Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of people talking about our podcast in the chat right now, which is great. So yeah, we actually have an awesome podcast, and a couple of the things that you guys are asking about in the chat, our instructors have podcasts literally on those topics, which is great. And then somebody just asked about the After Class podcast, our agility podcast. We took a little bit of a break, Nancy, but we are back. We've just put two episodes out. The Obedience podcast has a new episode every week. The Agility podcast has a new episode every other week. The Agility one, we actually just posted one on flying your dog. I saw somebody else asking about that in the chat. Because we fly our dogs all over the world. We know everything there is to know about that. And you can listen to those on any place that you listen to a podcast. Just search McCann Dogs, and both will come up.
We talked a little bit about good toys for training. And there's a question that came in. One of our moderators flagged it from Gandahar. Do tug toys encourage aggressive behavior?
Yeah. I mean, no, they don't. But
That's a common mistake that people make.
Yeah. It's not as common anymore, but it is something that we used to hear quite a lot. Where it stems from is, you know, if you're allowing your dog to grab anything from you, it doesn't even need to be a toy. It could be grabbing your sweatshirt. It could be grabbing anything. And you're not keeping control of the situation. You're not letting your dog understand they shouldn't take things with permission. You're not teaching your dog to give things up to you when you ask them as well. Not that that's going to lead necessarily to aggression, but what it will lead to is your dog not learning to have very good respect for you and just learning to do kind of whatever they want to. So we know that tugging and playing for a lot of dogs is a really natural thing, fun thing that they enjoy doing. It's a good outlet for them. So we highly encourage that you play tug with your dog, but you do it with rules.
Yeah.
So we teach the dogs to have good self-control. We teach them so that if the puppy's sitting, we even do this with puppies, dogs of any age. I can dangle a toy right in front of their face. I can even, with my puppy, I can even bonk him in the head. I can drape the toy over his face, and he will just sit quivering.
So excited.
He cannot wait for me to say the word.
Yeah.
And then when I say, okay, I let him grab, and we tug, and we play, and then I just say, out, or drop it, and he releases it right away, and then he waits for me to offer it again. So I can let him have an absolute ball. I can use it as a reward for his recall training, for all kinds of things. But before we do that, we teach them how to take the toy on command and how to give the toy to us on command, which allows us to stay in the driver's seat. So it actually does the opposite. It actually teaches your dog to be respectful. It also is a great way to exercise them. So we personally love, love, love training your dog to do tug and out, but there's rules that go along with it that actually make it so helpful for your relationship.
Does your dog, do you put music on for your dog while they're, you know, when you leave, when they're in their crate, when you have to leave the house? It's a challenge that we encountered when we were traveling with our dog. So we actually worked with some music composers to create McCann Dog's Music. It's a separate YouTube channel. Those songs in the playlists are also available on Spotify, Apple Music, yeah, and a bunch of different other music sites so that you can just put them on. We specifically designed them with dogs in mind. So they're of a very specific beats per minute that actually cause the dog to relax.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we use tunes and tones that actually fill the space.
Tunes and tones.
So, that's right.
Wow.
So what we worked for a long time on a thunderstorm playlist because the rumble of thunder, I don't quite remember all the equalizer terms, but like there's a section of an equalizer that we hear that's very, very low. And so our thunderstorms playlist, if you have a dog that's afraid of thunderstorms, the thunderstorms playlist features music that actually fills that bottom end. It takes the abruptness out of the thunder.
Kind of like white noise
rolling.
Or brown noise
exactly,
kind of thing
exactly.
That helps drown it
yeah,
out.
Yeah, yeah. And we know because we had this experience with our dogs. That's why we realized we have to do something about this because we'd put on music and it would be a bunch of ads or whatever. You know, you just never knew what you were getting. So we thought, why not make one specific for dogs? McCann Dog's Music, it's available on YouTube. And at the end of tonight's show, when we hit the stop streaming button, you guys will be sent directly there. So you can actually check it out. We always have two streams.
Mm-hmm.
Live. We have to talk about the difference between...
Do we have a Q&A that talks about us?
I don't know.
Amanda says, we love hearing about your pup and good training techniques, but have you ever done a Q&A about yourselves? Would love to learn more about you both. Do we have something?
I don't know. I mean, we used to vlog.
Yeah, we actually have some really great vlogs where, like, we basically brought you along with us every day so you could kind of see what we did with our dogs every day and whatever. They're actually hysterical to watch now because they are a few years old now. But that might give you some insight, some of our older stuff.
I'm working with someone on something.
Lots of links looping. Oh, my God.
You okay? It's getting late here in the train station.
Dan's on it. He's going to try and find some of the old things. For those of you who have been with us for a while, honestly, you would probably get, because you watch us weekly, you would probably get a kick out of some of the vlogs. When we watch them, they're hysterical.
There's someone has proposed an idea for an opportunity for us that I haven't talked to Kale about yet that might fit this need.
Oh, dear God.
But we'll see. I don't know. Who knows what the future holds?
Mm-hmm.
But it could be an interesting opportunity.
Yeah.
Before we get there, though, I need to talk a little bit about what's the difference between quality versus quantity of dog training.
Mm-hmm.
We have to point out why this is so important because the mistake gets made over and over and over again for new dog owners. And it's the mistake that I made. I get it. I chose quantity over quality.
Yeah. I think what happens is sometimes we, you know, worry about having to crate the dog too much or not wanting to give the dog enough freedom to run around or whatever it might be. We end up thinking about, we end up sacrificing the quality because we are feeling guilty about the quantity that the dog is spending doing something.
Yep.
So the easiest example that comes to mind is like crating your dog versus like training and exercising your dog.
Right.
So for example, if you're a busy person and you don't have an opportunity to, you know, watch your dog every single second of the day, then you need to think about being a good dog owner and having good quality time with your dog. I know for me, if I have a busy day and I don't have a lot of opportunity to have several training sessions in a day, or, you know, sometimes I don't have time to take my dogs on like the big long walk that I would really like to. I know that if I take a few times throughout the day where I spend some quality time with my dog one-on-one, doing something that's going to enhance our relationship, I feel so much better about, you know, the 4, 5, 6 hours that my dog maybe it needs to spend in their crate. I would rather do that than sacrifice my training or my relationship by letting my dog rehearse, you know, barking in the backyard just because I feel guilty about having him in the crate, because now I'm creating an issue. Yeah. If I would just go outside with him for 10 minutes 100%. And throw a ball or play tug or do some restraint recalls, not only am I tiring the dog out, which is what we want to do, of course, but I'm also doing something that builds and blends our relationship so that I don't feel so guilty when I put the dog away. So, you know, if you do short spurts, but you get really good training and interaction in with your dog, that's far better than like the long drawn out things throughout the whole day or week.
Well, because then at that point, your dog is ready to go to sleep. Yeah. Like, it isn't fair to do nothing with your dog all day and like have them stay in a confined area. Like, you have to do stuff with them, things with them, but those things don't have to be complicated. We talk a lot in our online training programs, in our in-class programs, but like, what is the stuff you do outside of training that's great for training?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a great example is like playing tug, using our tug toys.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, these are, doing restraint recalls are way more fun when it's not to a food reward.
Yes.
You kind of need a dog that loves toys, but that's the kind of, that's the ending of that exercise that you really want. You want your dog understanding that when they get to you, it is the most exciting part of this entire drill. So, you know, those are the choices that I want you to make. By the time you've spent quality time with your dog, they need to have a nap, especially a puppy or a young dog in training. Work them until they're ready for like, okay, I can turn my brain off now. That's exactly what you want to be aiming for. We actually have a couple of videos here on the channel talking about exercising your dog.
It's important.
And, yeah,
it's super important. An exercise dog is a happy dog.
100%. I want to say a huge thank you to our Heart Dog team who were in the chat tonight, our moderators. Their names in blue, they're part of the McCann Dogs crew, including lots of links, Lufa. I want to thank him for joining us tonight. And I want to thank you.
Did I say Lufa?
I hope to see you in the next train station. I really hope to see you on the next coaching call as part of our Puppy Essentials or our Life Skills program. Links are in the description
below.
Join us.
We'll hang out on Monday.
That's right. Absolutely. I can't wait for it. Now, after this show, you're going to get to go check out the McCann Dogs music channel. Try not to fall asleep. It's relaxing music.
Don't be too relaxed.
But with all of the teaching, all of the training, all of the things that we've talked about tonight, the rest, my friends, well, that is up to you.